linoleum knife.
It made really cool squiggle lines on the little meter I'm looking at here.
You know, back in the early 90s, they didn't piddle around with waiting for someone to drop the beat. They just had the beat. The beat just had.
It was there.
It was already there. The beat was there. It never went away. Nobody had to drop the beat. Nobody, it just was, it was, you could count on the beat.
The beat was present.
Being there. You could always also count on those, like, sound, like a sound of a swarm of angry hornets chasing you. Yeah, that was entertaining dance music back in the early 90s.
And what was that?
I don't know where the cassette case is. Something.
You don't even know.
It was from a rave.
It's not a rave. It's a happening.
It was from a rave I know the name of the song. I know the name of the song.
Mm-hmm. This will be good.
It's Punisher. Mm. I chose it. Because I did finally finish watching Playmate of the Apes.
Ah.
And the big climactic scene.
Is a rave?
Kind of.
Did you ever attend an actual rave, Dave White, of Movies.com?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the day?
Yeah. It was fine.
Here or like in the U.S. or in England or
in the England once, just once. It was once. Like I went once and some guy handed me a. This was back in the day when this was 1989. Back in the day when you could be like walking down the street in London and if you looked young, someone would
hand you a flyer,
hand you a little paper, and it would have a smiley face on it with a phone number, and you would call the number and they would give you directions to some car park somewhere. That was tough.
Gotcha.
If the police didn't close it down, then, you know. But the...
I, Alonzo Duraldi of therap.com yes. and What the Flick, completely missed the whole rave thing. I never went to one.
I liked it when the music was... I liked it when the music sounded like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, early house music I dug because it sounded very gospel-y and had lots of pianos in it and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Culminating in, you know, people like Black Box.
Right.
And then the aggressive sounded stuff started, and I really liked that because it sounded more like punk rock to me. Mm. We both just took a sip of our respective beverages.
Yes.
You have an iced mocha.
Yes.
I have tea.
You do.
And, I went and it was, you know, the music is fine. People have a weird idea about me as being, oh, I'm all there, only punk rock, only metal, only noisy, meh. But I'm ecumenical.
You contain multitudes.
I'm a lot of things. And so.
Did the music go better with you?
Did it sound better with me?
Sound better.
It took me higher.
Uh huh.
Did
it make the people come together?
It made the people come together. I put my hands up in the air.
Like you just didn't
not
care.
For Detroit, but just for because
to show your underarm hair.
Yeah, and it was fine. It was fine. It was an interesting experience to have.
Did you take anything?
I'm not talking about things like that on this clean podcast.
Yes,
we don't discuss illicit behaviors.
Fine.
Now made it sound as though I was some druggie at some point in my life.
Which you were totally not.
When,
this I know. You were straight edge, man.
When basically I've been 48 years of primarily being completely straight edge. I mean there have been brief moments of experimentation right. Where I've been like, let's see, I'm a writer, I should try this thing, and I should try that thing, because I need to have that experience. And each thing I would try, I'd be like, no, I do not want to try that thing again. I've done it once, and now I'm done with that thing.
Right.
And because nothing ever took with me. The only drug that has ever really taken hold of my life has been processed sugar. That's really, that's
and PG tips.
That is heroin. That is that is my heroin. If you put me in a room full of like candy and Twinkies and cakes, I would die because I would never be able to stop putting it into my mouth until I died.
I think I figured out the one thing that would be harder for me to give up than sugar. Dairy.
Well, okay, there's cheese and butter.
Cheese and right? butter.
Milk, I can get rid of milk because I already drink.
I know, you're Mr. Almond now.
Soy milk and almond milk. I'm fine with that. You put that on your cereal, it's really good.
No, it's not.
It is. But if you but cheese and butter would be real tough for me. Anyway, in Playmate of the Apes, let's just get right into it.
Okay, yes, because you skipped last week.
I skipped last week. Okay,
give us the whole shebang.
And, Bibbs is texting me right now. Hang on, hang on. I am podcasting now. So I will talk to you later.
Don't call me when A-Team is on, and don't text me when I'm doing my podcast.
Where was I going? Okay,
Playmate of the Apes.
I forgot to watch Playmate of the Apes, my 15-minute chunk. And so what I did was I watched the entire final 45 minutes this week. We're just going to get out of the way. I'm going to clear the decks of Playmate of the Apes. I know everyone's been very excited.
Clamoring, yes. Okay, what is happening? What will happen?
I'm going to relay the plot to you.
Okay.
When last we visited Playmate of the Apes, the three astronauts were having a three-way.
Okay.
Because
as one does.
Because it felt like the right time.
Mm-hmm.
They
were on the run and in the jungle.
It was the right time of the night.
Yeah.
Or the day. I don't know when it was. Anyway, Misty Monday is actually not a terrible actress. I mean, she is, but she's not. Compared to the other knuckleheads in this film, she is
She is street by comparison.
She's the most convincing of the people in this film. Except when she's having sex. Because if you are really, you're paying attention to the sex scenes in these softcore, romps, it is the least convincing simulation of anything. Because they're not really doing it. It's not pornography. They're not actually having sex.
Right.
But,
it's sex adjacent.
Essentially, women who probably supplement their incomes with stripping and exotic dancing and personal appearances and stuff like that. You would think that
so they're good at making the faces.
Being a part of the sex adjacent industry,
right,
would make them good at simulating something akin to sex, but they don't do that very well.
Mm.
Like at one point, Misty Monday is being held from behind by the Russian astronaut chick, and the Russian astronaut chick, no one is doing anything to her. She's simply holding Misty Monday, but the Russian astronaut chick is making, like, orgasm faces.
Hmm.
And I'm like, no one's doing anything to you to give you that face. You're not enjoying the pleasures of anyone pleasuring you.
Maybe it's the mere presence of Misty Monday.
Just being near her.
I don't know.
Maybe. Shall I ask Bibbs?
Please don't.
He's
I'm sure he has an opinion on it, and I don't want to know what it is.
Maybe while you're talking about something, I'll ask him. But it's good to have him on call, really. Ask a heterosexual man.
Mm-hmm. Who knows a lot about porn.
Who knows a ton about porn. He and I have had extensive porn discussions. And so the Russian chick is making a face like something really good is happening inside. It's not. Then Misty Monday, they change positions, and Misty Monday, how do I say this without saying it, to simulate a specific act that sometimes people do, Misty Monday goes and rubs her forehead on the Russian chick's butt cheek for an extended amount of time. Again, she ain't doing anything to that chick. Rubbing her, you know what happens when someone rubs their forehead on your butt cheek? Not much. It doesn't make you feel great.
Don't try this at home.
It doesn't make you feel great. So, the thing is, they can't even kiss right. They don't even kiss each other properly.
It's is it that porny, like, tongues outside kissing?
They stick their tongues out and sort of maybe sort of flick them together. Mm-hmm. But when one of them is trying to kiss the other one's lips are all in the wrong place for it. It's sort of like, like, it would be lovely if I was kissing this laptop. That's how... That's
well,
how,
one of them has those crazy lips anyway.
Right.
Like, we're...
Right.
She was not born with.
So then a siren goes off.
Okay.
And then everybody starts running to escape from the planet of the apes.
Mm-hmm.
And they're in a forest, and Misty Monday punches two gorillas. She starts beating them up.
Okay.
Because, you know, she's a tiny little thing, and they're right. giant gorillas.
Yeah.
So obviously she can take them.
Well, she is an astronaut.
They run into a guy who is screaming Charlton Hestonisms in front of a very digital-looking Statue of Liberty. Mm. You know, you really did it this time. Ah, right. Damn you to yeah, right. the hell, and mm-hmm. stuff like that. When he sees the chicks, he stands up and he starts flexing. And he says, me big strong man, I fall from sky. And Misty Monday, this is the best scene in the whole movie. Misty Monday flexes her arms and goes, yeah, me too. And then they run off. And he goes, wait, come back. I haven't had a specific sexual act done to me in a year. No answer. Then the ladies who are running away, they stumble upon the U.S. Capitol building. Next to a Sphinx, next to a Bill Clinton memorial, which is a statue of two people doing a thing, and a lemonade stand. And so when they get to the lemonade stand, they order some lemonade because they're thirsty.
Mm-hmm.
And then they run into another female escapee, and she and Misty Monday have sex. And then...
Because minutes have passed.
Then everyone catches up with them. The apes and everyone, all the other, you know, playmates, they catch up to them. And then they all, including the apes, they do a big rap number. They rap over a terrible beat, and no one's got any sort of connection to a beat.
And everyone's white in this movie.
More or less, yeah. Then the bad apes catch up to them, and there's a huge battle. And finally... As a show of affection, the female Dr. Ape, whose name I cannot remember. I know it was some ridiculously...
Dr. Cornholio.
Yeah, it was that. She kisses Misty Monday on the lips.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. That is as close to anybody being anybody's playmate as you get. So the title is a total lie.
Ah.
And finally, the missing link comes along, who's half man, half ape,
mm-hmm.
and he says... But everyone needs to understand that apes and humans are the same, and we should all have sex. And so the four female main playmates, including Misty Monday, have a four-way to an early 90s rave track, which is why I chose the early 90s rave track
gotcha.
For today's opening music. There's this very sort of kind of noise while they're doing it. They're just dumb little four-way. Then Misty, hang on,
sorry,
I'm not done
sorry.
Yet. This movie has a lot of things happening. Then Misty Monday escapes in her spaceship, and she crash lands again on the planet of the chickens.
Oh, God.
Copyright 2002.
Oh, man.
This movie's 10 years old. Mm. I'm just now catching up to it. So I got to say this about this movie. A, it sucks. B, it's not sexy at all. And I would like any person who has a stake in this sort of thing to tell me why they think it might actually be sexy. Like, is there a man, is there a heterosexual man that wants to see, you know, softcore lesbianism on screen? Who really, really likes this? Because it's 3 seconds away from your computer to get free, immediate, hardcore lesbian pornography. At
true.
What point? Who wants this? It's funny to watch.
Hotel chains?
Yeah, it's funny to watch this stuff. I mean, I had a good time watching this terrible thing.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the point. The point is not to watch it and be entertained by it.
No.
The point is to watch it and J it.
Right.
Now, who's J-ing it to this?
I
don't think anybody. I don't think anybody's J-ing it to this. And so...
Softcore does sort of seem like it harkens back to an earlier age where it was more difficult to see boobies, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't get it.
Nothing makes sense.
I actually just finished watching Drum on Netflix, which sounds kind of similar if the slaves are the astronauts and the awful white plantation owners are the apes.
We're going to get to the current cinema soon. Apparently, Alonzo's now going to tell you all about Drum.
No, I...
Tell me what year this is from and why it exists.
It's like 1976.
I mean, I know the answer. I just for the sake of the people.
This came up because I made a joke about Mandingo a couple of weeks ago when you were talking about Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. And I realized I had seen Mandingo, but I'd never seen Drum, which is not exactly a sequel, but it's based on a novel by the same guy who wrote Mandingo.
And it was made because Mandingo was
popular. It was made because Mandingo was popular, and like people from that film pop up in this one, but Ken Norton is here again, even though he died in the first one, but he's playing a different guy. And I think maybe Warren Oates is supposed to be the son of the James Mason character. Anyway.
Warren Oates is awesome. And in this movie, he's embarrassing.
Yeah.
Is he alive still?
He died.
Okay. I can only imagine him coming to the end of his life and thinking, yeah, maybe I wouldn't have been in Drum. Because I didn't watch the whole thing with you, but I was walking through the living room back and forth as you were watching
it. I loved your comment that one bedroom had way too much Dacron in it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it did. The set design was cheap, and it was clear that they were using 70s synthetic materials on, everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So basically, you know, Ken Norton is the son of a black slave and a Cuban woman, but, you know, she actually had her slave / lover raise the child as her own, even though the Cuban woman was always sort of taking care of both of them. And they're in New Orleans, and this foppy gay guy shows up and wants to see Drum fight this other slave named Blaze, who's played by Yaphet Kotto, because the foppy gay guy likes to watch big black guys sweat, basically. And then he buys Drum, and then he wants to have sex with Drum, and Drum's not having it, so then the Cuban woman sells him to Warren Oates, and they sneak him out of town in the middle of the night with Yaphet Kotto. And then so Warren Oates runs this plantation where they breed slaves. So it's all about getting the big buck slaves to have sex with the female slaves. And he brings along this snooty English woman to like try and teach his horny daughter some manners. And she's played by Rainbow Smith, who's like one of the great sort of 70s, you know, like exploitation.
She's
stars.
Always touching Ken Norton's butt.
Oh, yes. And always trying to get into his pants, literally. And then Pam Grier is this slave who's like sleeping with Warren Oates at night, but then, you know, Ken Norton tells her that no white man could ever love you the way I do. It's so tacky, this movie. On the one hand, I can imagine where maybe after Roots, like, there was a certain appeal for black audiences to see a plantation burn down, which happen in this movie, and that's probably the highlight. But, like, you know, it's just so tacky. I mean, like, you would just think that all that happened in the pre-Civil War South was like people having sex or talking about sex, and more uses of the N-word than you will ever hear in your life. But you know, in a historically accurate context, it's ridiculous, this movie, and it's streaming on Netflix.
Technology, hooray.
I know. The classics at your fingertips.
I have just asked Bibbs the question that I was asking.
Oh, God.
And
William Bibbs Bibiani of the B-Movies podcast, which Dave and I guested on a couple weeks ago.
I'm gonna edit his answer because He's speaking freely.
Gotcha.
I only watch lesbian porn if there's something else involved in the porn. He needs them to be doing some very specific things with some very specific accessories.
I see.
He needs a surrogate him in the mix.
Uh huh.
He says this sort of thing is for kids. He's like, it's when naked ladies are doing things you don't understand. Yes. Thank you, William Bibbiani of CraveOnline.com.
For illuminating.
And the B-Movies podcast. Yes. For bringing the...
insight.
For bringing the perverted straight guy's perspective to Playmate of the Apes.
Okay. I guess maybe this is less of a leap than I thought, but let's go right into Katy Perry, Part of Me.
Katy Perry, Part of Me is a movie about Katy Perry on her concert tour, doing several things at once. She's getting divorced from Russell Brand because he's not nice to her. And she is navigating a grown-up relationship with her parents, who are hardcore Pentecostal ministers. She is also on her first gigantic worldwide tour.
And giving it all for her fans. Giving it all for the love fans. Her.
Who are...
Who have learned how to embrace their inner freak thanks to Katie's...
It's a very interesting...
mass market approved brand of wackiness.
Right. It's a very interesting sort of like consumer based, you know, candy land idea of freakiness.
Right.
Where it's a rainbow world of bubblegum and lemon drops and sluts.
Let's all be nonconformist by wearing the same blue wig.
It's a strange thing where, like, it's a very childlike atmosphere with, right, like, dancing gingerbread men, and her dancers all have cupcakes on their heads, right, and are dressed like candy canes. Everything is, you know, rainbows and unicorns, and it's like a Lisa Frank notebook.
With cleavage.
But with an undercurrent of... Everybody get naked and get down. I mean, seriously, if you listen to the songs...
They say the songs are...
The songs flirt with all kinds of, like, sexual stuff.
Yeah.
And sometimes they just come right out and say what they are doing in the songs. I mean, that Last Friday Night song...
There's a naked guy in my bed or
whatever. No, there's a reference to... We had a three-way. In the song. And I'm like, little girls...
Are singing
along. Yeah. And so...
well, yeah, I mean, it's an teenage dream. Like, you know, we went to a hotel and got drunk and made a fort out of sheets. Or whatever.
It's a thing where, and I'm not saying that
is not a bad thing.
It's people shouldn't be, you know, having sex, but maybe not if you're nine. Maybe not if you're 9 years old. But you know, you see these, like, moms bring their little girls to these concerts, and.
Is it third wave feminism?
It's an interesting. I don't know what kind of feminism it is. It's an interesting juxtaposition of innocence and sluttiness, like all in one. And it's all like you can't separate one from the other. It's, you know, I'm in Candyland, but look what happens. My boobs squirt whipped cream. And so that's a weird thing.
I mean, the glasses they gave us at the 3D screening were the red heart-shaped Lolita glasses. And if you think about it, the poster image of Lolita is she's wearing the heart-shaped glasses and sucking a lollipop.
Right, right.
So, yeah, I mean, that is ground zero for Katy Perry's entire aesthetic.
Right. Having said that, I learned some things while watching this movie. I learned that I am a Katy Perry fan because it hadn't really occurred to me. I don't buy her songs. I've never downloaded one from iTunes. I've never bought her CD or downloaded it or anything like that.
You can't help hearing them.
I know all of these songs and honestly did not quite realize that they all come from the same album.
Oh, yeah.
With the exception of the earliest, you know, hits like Hot and Cold. And
I Kissed a Girl.
I Kissed a Girl. And so I realized, you know, I was like, oh, yeah, I like that song. Oh, well, I like that song, too. Oh, Teenage Dream, I like that song. Hot and Cold is my favorite, and California Girls is I live in Los Angeles, so California Girls is obviously the national anthem of Southern California.
I like a lot of her songs when they're done by the cast of Glee better.
No, you don't. You yeah. only think you do.
I like.
You are wrong.
I like so many, I like the Warblers version of California or of me Teenage crazy. Dream better. I'm sorry, I just do.
It makes me crazy.
I like Katy Perry's Firework better than Lea Michele's. I'll give you that one.
Are you sure?
Positive.
Are you absolutely sure? Yes. Are you totally sure that you don't prefer the Glee version of everything?
I'm not talking about everything. I'm talking about Katy Perry specifically.
You disappoint me.
Well,
I'm not.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not being true to the Katy Perry aesthetic because she's such an important artist. How dare I go to the cover version?
She is Kim Gordon compared to Lea Michele. Okay? She's Wendy O. Williams compared to the kids on
Glee. Still, the auto-tuned Warblers, I prefer their version of Teenage Dream.
Yeah. She's Patti Smith. How's
okay,
that?
Okay, yes, I get it.
All right,
it,
are you following me? So anyway, it's an interesting movie because into this aesthetic of, let's all drop our pants, comes Russell Brand, who represents actual depravity.
Right.
And genuine sleaziness.
Rock and roll.
And, yeah. This is a man with a history of troubles.
Right.
It was very funny, and I'm a fan, other than when he's in movies like Arthur.
Yeah. Or Rock of Ages.
But there's a moment early in the movie where he participates in a sort of like pre-show group hand-touching, you know, good thoughts, mm-hmm. prayers, or whatever circle. And you see the discomfort on his face. Like,
he's kind of sitting in the drink, okay.
Like, all right, here I am, I'm going to be a part. I know you're my wife and all, and it's weird, but he's really it's the Garden of Eden, and he's the snake, and that is what goes down in this film. Other than that, there's really not much else to it. There's an interesting bit that I wish they would have explored more about her relationship with her parents, because they were so hardcore that she was not allowed to eat Lucky Charms as a child
because it was a cult.
Because luck was magic and magic was Satan.
Right.
That was satanic. And so they couldn't eat Lucky Charms. She couldn't watch The Wizard of Oz. She was not allowed to do these things. And
now the parents are at her shows.
And they're in the hot and cold video.
Yeah.
I mean, they're real chill now. And they
so are they purely pragmatic, or what's going on? Yeah, they don't ever explain that. You're right.
They don't explain what the process was of her reconciling them to her new life. Because she grew up in that environment and was actually a Christian singer for a hot minute. You know, not an incredibly successful one, but she put out a record of Christian music under her name. Katie Hudson is her actual last name. And so that's a strange thing, and I wish I had seen more of that in the movie.
What
I also wish that they had given us full-length songs.
That was what I was going to say. What bugged me about this movie, there's not a single song that's played in its entirety, and there's not a single song that is not interrupted at some point by interviews, or here's what's going on backstage, or, you know, let's cut away to this whole other thing. It's like,
isn't she great?
Exactly. Could I have one song? One, you know?
I was really hoping for one moment of someone saying, okay, here's where she drives me crazy. Like, one hanger-on, one entourage person, one assistant, one hair, makeup, costumer person saying, all right, there are moments in the day where she drives me out of my head and she's a total B.
Yeah, no, it's such an infomercial for her.
You would love to watch her at 3:30 every day when she goes ballistic about something petty. Put the camera on that. Like, yeah. I want one of her assistants to be on camera going, yeah, she drives me out of my head.
Clearly, like, I guess they must have asked fans to send in these sort of, like, testimonials from their laptops. You got all these people in their beds. I'm like, oh, she's so great. And the one that killed me was the girl that goes, Katie tells us that blah blah blah. I was like, "Woo, cult moment! What's going on?" The best part for me is, you know, the whole movie. You know, there's like the Russell Crowe thing, and everything's all, oh, she, you know, she loves him, and every couple
Russell Crowe.
Russell, sorry, that's what Hank was did. I did it too. Russell Brand. You know, and so every 2 weeks...
What does Ben tell us?
Every 2 weeks in the tour, no matter where she is on the planet, she will fly back to L.A. to spend 2 or 3 days with her new husband and then schlep all the way back, and it's exhausting.
And she's exhausting herself, yeah.
Anyway, so finally, like, they get to Sao Paulo, and clearly it's all over, and she's, like, fetal and crying and just, you know, everybody's in the room going, she's crying.
She's crying. I think she's depressed.
Like, she's not in the room, you know, they're talking about her. Anyway, and there's been a recurring thing for the whole movie where, like, the show starts, she takes this elevator up to the stage and she's wearing, you know, she's got, like, 2 big peppermint candies spinning on her breasts and she sings Teenage Dream and, you know, she puts this big smile on and pops out of the stage and, you know.
Only after the assistant guy is, like, makes a smile on his face, like, remember this?
Right.
Do this before you get up out of the hole in the stage.
So, you know, the whole movie, she's doing the smile, and then, like, Sal Palace is like, cry, and then she just, like, just to put on this rictus of a smile. Right. It's such a Valley of the Dolls inside Daisy Clover, right, like, backstage showbiz heartbreak moment.
Yeah.
Which they lucked out on, frankly. I mean, like, nobody knew when this thing started that she was going to be, marriage was going to end, you know.
Hit the fan, yeah.
But yeah, that's they, apart from stumbling on to one interesting story there, the rest of this movie is just this sort of, like, you know,
Justin Bieber documentary.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah, yeah. It's another hagiography.
I just wanted Celine Dion to come along. Yes. Because, you know, her documentary.
Through the Eyes of the World.
Yes. Her documentary was interesting because what you learn about Celine Dion in that movie is that she's nuts, but in a way that's
a good way.
In a way that's completely appealing.
Yes.
In a way that makes you think, you know, I don't want to listen to your music, but you, I could probably hang around. Like, you are a crazy person that is also seemingly quite kind and unusual and probably a fun time. You know,
yeah, I don't want to have lunch with Katy Perry. I would have lunch with Celine Dion.
See, here's the thing. I didn't think there was anything monstrous about Katy Perry.
No, just nothing all that appealing.
I just am interested. I would be interested in seeing a different documentary. I enjoyed this movie, but it wasn't everything I thought it ought to be.
No.
So I think you liked it less than
I liked it less than you did, because I even going in knowing that it was going to be another sort of Justin Bieber, you know, selling me soap kind of thing, I just thought, how hard could it be to just, you know, these are hit songs. It's not like you have to convince the audience to listen to them, right. You know, so play one, you know, in its entirety. It just seemed an odd
every
choice.
Single one of them gets interrupted in some way or another.
Yeah.
Or truncated in some way.
And truncated, yeah. Both, you know, so.
You know.
And frankly, you know.
They gave us those 3D glasses that were in the shape of hearts. Is that what's happening in theaters? Or did they just do that for us?
I don't know. But I'm bringing mine to the next Real D screening.
So Gary Cotti is the same.
Going to rock that look.
He's like, I'm never giving these up.
I have to say, you know, when she finally, you know, classic Chekhov, they introduce the candy cane that shoots whipped cream in Act 1, and then she fires it in Act 3.
Right.
You know, which is a moment that the 3D camera, you know, could really capture well. They don't ever get the right angle for it. They're always at these weird, the camera's always in weird places for that.
Right.
The Jonas Brothers shot foam into a 3D camera much better, I have to say.
Right. It made me want to see Purple Rain in 3D. Because at the end.
Oh, the water squirting. Because that's just all,
the guitar that squirts water at the end. That was, you know, that's, everyone is stealing from that moment.
True.
Purple Rain is the moment that everyone is ripping off. And I
would
like to see...
to be your weekend lover!
I would like to see Purple Rain in... if you're going to re-release something in 3D, make it Purple Rain. I would totally go see that.
Why not?
I would totally go see that in 3D. And you just made me forget something that I was going to say. And I...
Foam, Jonas Brothers, Purple Rain.
I don't know. Something. It was something great.
I'm sure it was a pure diamond that will be lost forever.
What's the other movie we're talking about? If I think about it again, I'll come back.
Okay, great. Oliver Stone's Savages.
All right, you explain what it's...
Okay. Based on a very popular novel that I have not read, but people tell me is really great.
When we say a very popular novel, are we talking the kind that comes out in mass market paperback that you buy at the airport?
I don't know if it's that very popular, but people have been very enthusiastic about it. You know, like people were telling me that it was like, oh, it's James Ellroy meets something. You know, like so. I don't know what the sales figures were, but the people who like it a lot. So it's about these three people in Southern California, these pretty white people. One of them is a studied botany and business, and his best friend is an Iraq Afghanistan vet who comes back from Afghanistan with these
weed
seeds. Yep. And the dippy blonde girl they both love, who loves them both. And, they, you know, using the seeds and the botany know-how, they create this like super dope that has really high THC, numbers. And so then of course the Mexican drug cartel moves in and wants in on their action. And
like Frankenhooker's, super crack.
Exactly. And, you know, they don't want to get involved with the whole Mexican drug cartel, so the Mexican drug cartel kidnaps the dippy blonde, and it's on!
Right.
That's pretty much what Savage is about. Yeah.
I enjoyed myself quite a bit. I don't think it's an important movie, and I don't think it's really about much other than, the occasional parallel drawn between people like Walmart and the big, you know, drug cartels,
right?
Which is and those parallels are drawn very faintly and sort of offhandedly, just sort of like, yeah, we're not going to dwell too much on this. Yeah. Although this is what I believe, like Oliver Stone, you can feel like
sure
he understands that the corporatization of everything has even reached the drug world,
yeah,
and that the indie people are being the mom and pop growers are being, you know, squashed,
right, or taken over,
and he would maybe like to make a bigger point about that, but he doesn't really. It's just sort of like
he does make a point about the drug war and what a waste of time it is.
Well, yeah.
And blah blah blah.
Yes.
It ain't dull. I will give him that. I mean, things keep moving and things keep happening, and there's lots of, you know, the first part is all sort of ridiculously glossy and sunny and, you know, lens flare, just golden.
Blake Lively is more sun kissed in a real-looking way than anyone I've ever seen in a film, I think. The camera loves her so much that her fake tan is an impeccable makeup job. Mm-hmm. What they've done with her is because you see people with the fake tans, and they look gross. They look weirdly brown or orange or like tan mom or whatever.
John Boehner.
She looks like just a Southern California, you know, lady that's been out in the sun just
right
on the beach, you know.
Yeah, if only she didn't open her mouth, she would be perfect in this movie.
Well, yeah.
She's terrible. And worse, she narrates.
That's my favorite part.
And even worse, the narration has lines like, I had orgasms, John had wargasms. That's like in the first 10 minutes.
Yeah. It provoked lots of laughter,
I'm sure,
from the audience, and it never stops. Like, she narrates the entire film,
yeah,
and she's given a lot of dialogue narration. She's given a lot of narration to say that it should be coming from the mouth of someone a little more hard bitten than Blake Lively,
yeah.
She's
more believable as a jet fighter pilot in Green Lantern.
Kind of, yeah.
Than in this movie.
Although the moment where she goes shopping is kind of dreamy and beautiful.
Mm.
And it's meant to be.
Yeah.
It's meant to be like this final moment of lost in rich girl innocence.
Right.
You know, that she is. And it's she walks through South Coast Plaza and it's just sort of like pulling Manolo Blahnik's shoes from the wall. And the film sort of luxuriates in this for like a few minutes. It's really weird to watch it happen. And then suddenly, boom, kidnapped. And right. that's Now, and then the movie begins.
If there, yeah, because it really doesn't get interesting at all until she finally gets kidnapped, and the thing gets really pulpy and trashy, and Selma Hayek shows up.
She's fantastic.
And she's such fun to watch because she knows exactly what movie she's in and is chewing up the scenery with aplomb.
Yeah, she's great. There's a moment where Blake Lively spends a lot of her kidnapped time whining about the conditions.
Yes.
Until finally she winds her way into dinner with Selma. I don't know I don't know who decided to give in to this request. I can't remember now what the process was in the film, but there doesn't seem to be an A to B to C sort of connection. Like, they're sort of like, she's really been bugging us. Like, she's been really bothering us to have dinner with you. And in the real world, the boss of the drug cartel would be like, so?
Yeah, keep her chained to her cot. Keep her chained up. Quit bugging me.
Yeah. But Selma Hayek agrees to have dinner with Blake Lively. And Blake Lively, during this dinner, does nothing but, like, ramble on about, like, things that she wants to accomplish with her life, just dumb things like, I really want to go to college. And there's a brilliant, worth the entire price of admission moment of Selma Hayek's reaction. Blake Lively is speaking obliviously, and Selma Hayek is staring off into space, holding her fork in the air like, I said yes to this? Like, I can't believe I'm here listening to you talk right now. And it's a face of like, it's got sarcasm and incredulity and exhaustion and disgust, and it needs to be an internet meme.
It
needs to become a moment where Selma Hayek's face with the fork is what you see, and then whatever text you want to put
on. Oh, you think
that's really?
Let's talk about John Travolta's hair.
The first time I've ever seen his actual hairline.
Yes.
Yeah. And I know that we're really not talking about the cinematic qualities of this film or whether or not it's good or bad film. It's an entertaining, violent drug crime story, and not really much more than that. I didn't really see...
With an ending that I found exceedingly exasperating, but you were more forgiving about.
I like the ending. I didn't really see much more to dig deeply into than its surface pleasures. Uh-huh. And it's got plenty of those.
Sure.
It's fun to watch.
No, absolutely.
It's rehashed stuff left and right, but it's fun to watch. And I really dug Travolta as the corrupt DEA with his actual hairline.
Yeah.
You really get to see balding Travolta.
Yeah.
He's not a pleasant thing to look at anymore. He has done things to his face. He has done male cosmetic procedures to his face, and it's clear that he has.
Yeah.
So he's strange. But I was it didn't bother me because I was too busy looking at his hair.
Yeah.
You really do finally see his actual hair. I don't know if Oliver Stone
even showed up at the premiere with that weird doll hair thing.
Yeah. In public, even now, he'll put that thing on. But in this movie, there he is with his actual balding head. And I don't know how Oliver Stone convinced him to do that, but he did it.
It's a bold choice.
Well, I guess. I mean, why would he go back to faking it now? I mean, it's there. It's there to see.
There are so many questions about why John Travolta does...
The things that John Travolta does.
The hair is low on the list, frankly.
Yeah.
So the Savages. And then also, we didn't get around to last week, Take This Waltz, which is open in a few cities and is also available on demand from various places. It is Sarah Polley's second film as a writer-director, the follow-up to her film Away From Her, which garnered a Best Actress nomination for Julie Christie. And that was an adaptation. This is an original story with Michelle Williams as a woman who finds herself drifting apart from her husband, played by Seth Rogen, not for any specific reason. He's not cruel to her. It's not, it's just, they're just sort of growing apart, and she finds herself attracted to an artist slash rickshaw driver who lives across the streets.
Yeah, a rickshaw driver.
Yeah. And it's funny, Dave and I watched this movie separately, and we both kind of had variants of the same joke, which was basically the movie should have been called F or Get Off the Pot, because
right.
Michelle Williams spends so much of the movie dithering.
Yeah.
Which can be dramatically interesting, but not here.
Right. You never learn really much about her, other than that she doesn't finish what she started.
Right.
She wants to be a writer. She's not really much of a writer. She wants, you know, to do all these things that she doesn't do. She wants this new guy, and she won't give herself to him. Instead, she kind of just lives in a comfortable rut with her husband.
She skates as far to the edge as possible right. without completely, right. you know.
And now here's the problem. The movie... I almost wish it had been based on something else, just like Away From Her had been, because I want Sarah Polley to trust herself and her audience more than to give them obvious stuff to hang on. You know, when the very first conversation that she has with the new guy that she will eventually run off with, and that's not a spoiler, so don't freak out about it. When the very first conversation she has with this guy is her saying, I hate having to catch planes in different cities because I'm afraid of connections.
Yeah, I know.
You might as well stand there and wave your hands high above your head and go, look over here, look what I'm doing. Look, this is the thing. I'm telling you,
it's symbols.
statement of theme, you know. And that's, I want...
Thesis.
I want... less.
Yeah.
I want less. I want, I don't need to be, I don't, you know what? I'm smart.
I can figure these things out if you.
I want you not to have to.
Put up signposts.
Tell me, yeah.
And then you got Sarah Silverman playing.
The coolest person in the movie.
Yeah, her sister-in-law who is a recovering alcoholic who then backslides. And the movie sort of strings her along so that she can have the big drunk scene at the end where she tells Michelle Williams all the uncomfortable truths about herself.
Right.
And that's really the only reason she's in the movie, is to like to wind up being this sort of like boozy oracle, you know? And it's kind of like...
But she's cool.
She's great. Silverman is really good in this, but it's just such lazy writing to like have this character that serves no other purpose than that, you know.
The most emotionally affecting character in the film is Seth Rogen.
Yeah.
And I know you think that's not right, but it is a fact.
It is skinny, non-shticky Seth Rogen.
Yeah, here's what's weird. I finally just now saw the trailer for this movie. And the trailer emphasizes Rogen a lot.
Huh.
And it emphasizes all of the half a dozen or so moments in the movie where he is giving you the full Seth Rogen.
Uh-huh.
There are about half a dozen lines of dialogue that come out of his mouth in the movie that are sort of jokey.
Right.
Or where he's laughing. And those are all in the trailer.
Huh.
And so... The movie is selling you something that the trailer is selling you something that you're not going to get. This trailer is selling you a version of him that only occasionally rears its head.
Right. And isn't really the way the character is structured.
The character is structured in a very, he's very quiet. He's a chef.
Yeah.
And he spends all day in the kitchen mostly making things and writing a cookbook. And every once in a while he'll do something funny, but it's not his reason for living. And then finally at the end where she dumps him, he has the most sort of emotional scene in the film because he's being dumped.
Yeah.
And he says, I thought you were going to be there when I died. And that's really sad. Yeah. And you sit there and you're like, poor Seth Rogen. You know, like you really feel for this guy.
And he hasn't done anything wrong to get dumped.
He hasn't done a thing wrong to get dumped. He's done nothing. He has just descended into a lot of what a lot of married couples do is they become a part of this sort of cuddly, companionable rut of you know, they're not constantly talking.
Right.
You know, they're not constantly entertaining each other. They're watching TV together quietly. They're eating dinner together without talking. And anybody who thinks that that's bad hasn't ever been in a relationship.
Right.
And that's just a thing that happens. It's not, it doesn't signify good or bad. Now, if that's all you do, then sure, you might have a problem.
Right.
Because I remember sitting there, I actually watched this with Bibbs. Huh. And I thought, okay, in the abstract, the things that she's showing you that are the problems in their relationship, if they happen regularly but not all the time, that's not a problem. And I turned to him and I said, Alonzo and I talk all the time. I mean, it's evidenced by the fact that we are doing this podcast. We would be having this conversation anyway.
We're just letting you in on it.
We wouldn't be describing the plots of films to each other because we would have both already seen them. But we would be having, other than that, we would be having this conversation anyway while eating breakfast
right.
on Sunday morning, which is, it's 9:30 right now. I mean, like, this is what we would already be doing this.
Right.
So I get that maybe there are people out there who aren't as verbal and non-shut-up-y as you and I are. But even if they are, more quiet, that doesn't mean anything's wrong.
No.
It doesn't mean anything's wrong. At the end, I remember my favorite line, Sarah Silverman, and this is also a line that she is in the trailer. Sarah Silverman's big moral lesson is in the trailer. And she says, there's a gap in life. There just is. And you don't run around like a crazy person trying to fill it all the time. Mm. The end. Story. That's it. That's your story. Having said that, it's a quiet, gentle movie. It's smarter than it has to be.
Yeah.
It's better than it has to be. It's not a terrible film.
No, by no means. It's just, it feels disappointing because Away From Her was so great.
Yes. Away From Her is a really smart film, really well made, well written,
well acted.
That was
a top five film for me that year.
Yeah, and it's devastatingly sad and meaningful. And I was hoping for something as good as that, and this is merely
like, if this had been her first film, it'd be like, oh, promising.
Yeah, you know? right. It's not a bad movie, it's just not a good movie.
Yeah, it doesn't, I mean, to call it like an interesting failure sounds cruel, but I mean, it's
a movie that's of interest.
Yeah, it's a movie that doesn't work, but you can't completely dismiss it either.
I would watch it, I would recommend seeing it for Seth Rogen and for Sarah Silverman.
Yeah.
And Michelle Williams, unfortunately, is saddled with a role that requires her to be kind of a drip.
Yeah.
And kind of annoying. You're sort of like, do something.
You want to smack her in the face.
Yeah.
And then there's
I didn't want to smack her in the face.
Well, you know what I'm saying. I don't mean in the wife-beater way.
I'm not a misogynist not a womanizer.
I don't mean
you.
In the wife-beater way. I mean in the get your life together way, you know. In the Cher and Moonstruck way. That kind of face-slapping. And I don't even remember the other guy's name, but he's a rickshaw driver, which is really annoying.
Right, yeah.
It's again with the symbol, the hitting you on the head.
I forget the actor's name. I guess he's Canadian.
You know, I will take you away.
And Seth Rogen are part of the Canadian content rule in the film.
True, because she's got two Americans in there.
Yeah. So
see it, I guess.
Fine,
but it's not. If you were a fan of Away From Her, lower your expectations a lot.
Yeah, quite a bit. It's not. It's not great.
Yeah,
we're done, right? That's.
I guess that was it. Yeah.
For letter reading.
Listener mail. Woo. Which we've been getting a ton, and thank you all. And I have to say, in being out and about, I am stunned to find out that people are listening to this thing.
what you're actually stunned by is the fact that there are people who are locally our actual friends who have been telling us that they're listening.
And strangers. And
that makes me laugh because
Tony.
I don't think that my real friends in the city here that I know and see regularly. I don't think any of them listen.
No, me neither.
But now I'm finding out that some of them really are. Yeah.
No, but like Tony at Book Soup when I went to buy you that Bresson book for your birthday.
Yeah.
Recognized my voice
right.
because he listens to the show.
I have not met Book Soup Tony.
That was kind of cool.
But if I go into Book Soup Tony and you're there, I'm sure you'll recognize me by the fact that I am a cartoon dog. Here's a letter.
Didn't we get a letter this week that said that you were like gravel on velvet or something?
No.
I thought I saw that in one of the emails this week.
No. It was when Bibbs called me the velvet lawnmower.
No, I know, but there was the, I think, I don't know if maybe you didn't read them all. One of the emails that I forwarded you this
gravel.
Week. Gravel Whatever. Came up, yes.
All right. Well, I'm sure I'll get to that.
Okay.
Thanks. This is from Dan. Thanks, as usual, for the good work you do. It's so gratifying to have a brand new linoleum knife on a Monday morning, especially at the crack of dawn, which is when I have the privilege of dragging my sad self to the office. In reply to your latest appeal, please find my best attempt at a top 10 movies list, done as quickly as possible without too much overthinking. For someone who likes talking about movies as much as I do, I am pretty shy about sharing personal top 10 lists, especially with people whose opinions I respect. There's your first mistake. But fears are for facing... No, they're not.
And chocolate is for eating.
They're for running from and denying.
And pretending they aren't there, yes.
Hopefully a harder response to your call will prove you that your fans are listening all the way to the end of the show. How many minutes have we gotten up to on Stitcher?
I haven't looked lately. It was getting better, though.
Did it pass the 10-minute mark?
I have to look.
Yeah. It should pass the 10-minute mark. Here's his list. Dr. Strangelove.
Great.
RoboCop.
Sure.
They're remaking that, you know.
I know.
And you know what they're going to do to it.
Remove all the satire?
They're stripping all of it. Yeah.
God.
That and...
And Starship Troopers.
And you know, the same thing is going to happen to Total Recall and Starship Troopers, yeah.
Well, Total Recall at least is based on something, so hopefully they'll... Yeah, who knows.
Ghostbusters.
Sure.
Great. Raising Arizona.
Yes.
Just terrific.
Mm-hmm.
Children of Paradise.
Okay.
And
there is a gorgeous new digital restoration that I think Criterion
or really?
Janus, whoever did. It was one of the opening night films at USA, and I think we may have already missed it here in town, but I didn't get to see it, but people were... I mean, I think if you go online, you can see like comparisons of what the old scenes look like and the new ones, and apparently it's stagged. Like, it's never looked this good.
Oh, wow. Well. Okay, well, I mean, they're going to bring it back here.
I'm sure it'll pop up somewhere, yeah.
Bottle Rocket.
Okay.
A Theater of Blood.
Yay!
John Carpenter's The Thing.
Okay, sure.
Aguirre, The Wrath of God.
I like Aguirre versus Megalon better, but that's just me.
The Invisible Man.
Okay.
We have no beef with any of your selections.
Can't you see me, Griffin?
You are not wrong. About anything.
No.
We have judged you 100%.
You win at movies.
100% knife. It would be dumb if we said you were 100% linoleum.
Isn't there some movie where knife is like an adjective for like awesome? Something is knife? That rings a bell.
I don't know.
If anybody knows what I'm talking about, drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
All right, here comes more. Here comes more letters. That's an email from 7th Row Center. Derek. Really like the show. Always listen on Monday morning on my way to work. I am a founder and chairman of the Tokyo branch of the Linoleum Knife Podcast Fan Club.
Yay.
I should say that this doesn't take up too much of my time.
Well, you're not trying hard enough, Derek. Get out there and recruit.
Good to hear you give a good review to 13 Warriors. Great J movie.
Oh, 13 Assassins is what they call it here.
13 Assassins, 13 Warriors. My top 10 for you in no order. Please hold these up to ridicule. Casino. I like Casino.
I like Goodfellas better.
I know.
Much better.
I think Casino's great. I think Sharon Stone
is... I want my jewels!
I think she's awesome in that movie.
I like the documentary segments about how the casinos work, yeah, like where the money goes and how they do the security. That I wish he'd just made that movie, like an Errol Morris kind of documentary.
With Nail and I.
You know, I like that movie. I don't... Do you have to be British to really get what that movie is about?
I don't know. Is Derek British?
Who knows? He lives in Tokyo. Anything's possible.
It could be anything.
It's just one of those... It's one of those things where, like, I you know, it's funny and I like it, but, like, there are people that love that movie, and I don't... I've never quite figured out what the object of fixation there was, but...
Maybe you should ask one of the hardcore lovers.
Perhaps. Again, if you have insight on this with Nail thing... LinoleumPodcast@gmail.com.
Blazing Saddles.
Yay. Great.
Master and Commander.
Okay. I never saw it, actually.
I saw it. It's fine. It was most notable to me.
I know what you're going to say.
For seeing it on the Fox lot with a friend who shall remain nameless.
Josh.
It was not Gary Cotty.
No.
Who, in a moment of silence between Paul Bettany and Russell Crowe...
Not Russell Brand.
...cheeped out the words, "Stick it in!" Audibly. So that people around us could really hear it. And I don't know if I elbowed him, or I shushed him, or I slapped his knee or whatever, but I was like, "No. No. None of your thing. None of your stuff.
Not here.
Here. I'm on the lot."
Remember working when I was working at the Advocate, and we were in the building across from the Chinese Theater on Hollywood Boulevard. We would get those movie signs that would cover the entire side of the building.
Right.
And so I just remember, like, looking through my window. I was looking through, like, Russell Crowe's armpit for like 2 months because we had a Master and Commander thing on the building.
Yeah. Heat. One of the most awesome movies of the 90s.
I find it crazy overrated.
It's so great. No, it's not overrated.
And between Pacino's hammy ass performance,
which is terrific,
and that ridiculously enormous and, like, you know, 747 views apartment that bookstore clerk Amy Brenneman somehow manages to have.
It's aspirational.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that movie's fine, but that's that's the movie where, like, where the Michael Mann people get all glassy-eyed, like, "Oh, Heat." I'm not down. Sorry.
One of the best films of that decade.
Yeah, whatever.
One of the best American movies of that decade.
Says you.
Says me. And I'm admittedly a huge Michael Mann fan.
Yeah.
But I have a reason for being a Michael Mann fan.
I like some of his films.
He's great.
I think a lot of them are ridiculous. Go ahead.
Heat is not one of them.
It's not ridiculous, but it's not that great.
I saw Heat in perhaps the best possible circumstances. As I do not care about American football.
Oh, you saw it on, like, Super Bowl Sunday?
I saw it on Super Bowl Sunday. Because I knew better than to go see something lady-ish on Super Bowl Sunday. I went to see something dude-ish on Super Bowl Sunday. And I had the whole theater to myself. Nice. My own private screening was so fantastic. Sonatine, the Beat Takeshi movie.
Have not seen it.
And I haven't seen that one either. So,
but I know it's important.
You got one on us.
Yes.
City of God. The Brazilian. Yeah, I just really can't stand that movie. I seriously cannot stand that movie. It's like this Boogie Nights sort of, you know, violence fetish film where they're simultaneously, you know,
Isn't this terrible? Oh, isn't this awesome?
Yeah, it wrings its hands and cheers at the same time for all the terrible things that go on.
Well, that's in like slump. That's like those Cecil B. DeMille movies. Isn't this orgy awful? I'm going to show you another 15 minutes.
Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Well, sure.
Yeah, who doesn't love
who
that?
Doesn't love
who doesn't love that movie? Betty Blue.
Ooh, okay.
It's been so long since I've seen Betty Blue that if I wanted to agree or disagree, I don't know that I would remember enough.
I remember liking it a lot. It's been a while for me, too. I love the Gabriel Yared score for that film.
Of course you did. You're a score lover.
Yeah.
You just... Alonzo's the kind of person that will listen to a film score just, like, for enjoyment.
Ooh, how weird.
It is weird. It's weird because it's meant to have a thing going on in front of it. It's meant to have a picture.
Really? And yes. what are the decapods supposed to have when you're listening to that? They're supposed to be burrowing through the ground looking for, you know, grubs and mites or something, not your listening pleasure.
For listeners who do not remember, over a year ago, when I opened the show by playing a cassette that is a field recording of amplified decapods skittering around in the water.
Sorry, that was a callback.
You don't need a picture because your brain is already giving you a picture of what it must be like to be a decapod with a microphone attached to your tiny little foot.
Scores may be created to go with specific images, but that doesn't mean they can't exist on their own.
As music. Sure, whatever. Your response just made me yawn.
I see.
District 9 is the last movie in this list, which is a fine entertaining. Fine,
yeah. I never quite got the big deal about District 9, but it's fine.
I enjoyed it a lot at the time, and I think I was very enthusiastic at the time. And since then, I've just been not really thinking much about it.
I remember I saw it late and was kind of like, this is what everybody's been gushing about? I just remember thinking like, okay, so wait, so that stuff turns humans into aliens and it powers a spaceship? Like what, you know, is it a floor wax and a dessert topping? Oh man, we have airplane and phone. Airplane is flying over. It's like, it's a jamboree in here.
Indiana.
Indiana wants me, but I'm not answering.
Call
from insert
group. I fixed that.
Bah. Okay, do we have any non-top 10 list mails you want to
remember? Hang on. Sorry for the delay here. You haven't lost us.
No, we're here.
No, that's it. I've just got top tens. Okay. So we're going to hold the rest for later.
Okay.
And then here's from now on, you're going to print these out for me so I don't have to dig through my email to find stuff. Do you have a DVD pick?
I do. In honor of Katy Perry, part of me, my DVD pick is Stop Making Sense. A movie where you actually get to see the songs performed in their entirety and not interrupted and no stupid interviews or gushing fans or any of that stuff. It's just performance, and it's Talking Heads, and it's really great, and I think it's probably like one of the great concert films of all
time. It's one of the great concert films of all time. Even if you don't know much about Talking Heads or think that you don't like them or whatever, you really ought to watch this.
Absolutely.
It's so terrific.
Yeah.
And it has a narrative, which I think is also really interesting.
True.
You know, there's a beginning and a middle and an end, and you can see it as it's happening.
And they kind of come on stage in the order in which they sort of joined the band.
Right.
You know, yeah, right. It's extraordinary. And I was not a big fan of them when I saw the movie and became one after seeing the movie. And that's one of the few music films I think that I've seen that sort of won me over that way, you know.
You didn't like them before the movie?
I was always sort of put off by them. I mean,
why?
I was a freshman in college, all right? I didn't really know a whole
lot. No excuse.
I don't know. I knew Burning Down the House, and that was about it. And it was just seeing that video with the sweaty David Byrne in that big suit. I was like, I don't know if I'm, you know.
Listeners, you can't see me shaking my head in disgust right
Look,
now.
We didn't all run out and buy the, you know, the B-52s album after we saw them on Saturday Night Live because they were weird. Sometimes, you know, some music you have to have introduced to you in the right way, and Stop Making Sense introduced Talking Heads to me in the right way.
I suppose I can accept this.
You don't know my life.
I do know your life. No. I know it intimately.
You did not know me when I was 17.
No, I didn't. Yeah. But, you know, you're the same person now that you were then. You're essentially the same person. So my DVD pick is a DVD that is out of print that you can barely get.
That's great.
But I'm going to recommend it anyway because, you know, you might have the opportunity out there someday. And if maybe you'll stumble across it. Maybe someone, you'll be at somebody's house and you'll see that they have it. Maybe they will be a fan of this kind of filmmaking.
Maybe Derek in Japan can get you a copy from a street corner.
Maybe
somewhere.
He can, yeah. Maybe you can find a bootleg. I know that the movie I'm about to tell you about is available in its entirety on YouTube. So,
not that we endorse that kind of thing usually.
It is. You know what? When something's out of print.
That's true, yeah. Why not?
Why not? Savage Streets. A 1984 revenge exploitation film starring Linda Blair. She plays a 27-year-old high school student who, along with other 27-year-old high school students, are involved with a really mean gang on a variety of savage streets.
Yes.
In Hollywood. And the one thing that I really, really, really love about this movie is not just the total badassery of Linda Blair, who keeps the whole movie going with her vengeance after they rape her little sister and kill her best friend.
And the sister is played by Linnea Quigley.
For no good reason. Like, these guys are not... They don't have any real reason to chase these girls and Linda Blair other than they're just bad. And they're just bad guys who want to do bad things. So they do these horrible things, and Linda Blair goes to the supply sergeant on Hollywood Boulevard.
Where they're running a special on crossbows and bear traps.
And she employs a variety of instruments and revenge accessories to get them all back in viscerally entertaining ways that I cannot recommend highly enough. And the outfits are impeccable because it's the movie. It's a movie's version of what tough kids in 1984 would have been wearing. Sort of like a post-apocalyptic leather studded, you know, headband flash dance sort of ensemble.
And John Vernon plays the principal.
Right. John Vernon plays the principal. Linnea Quigley, queen of trashy B-movies. She's the little sister.
Carol Ida White is the mean gym teacher.
Yeah. It's a great movie. It's real hard to find. It's out of print on all the varieties of DVD that it was released on. And
what's the company that made it? Like Motion Picture Marketing or something?
Motion Picture Marketing Film Center or something. Like, this is very... Yeah. And it's great. It's such a great, fun, terrible, trashy revenge movie. Find it in whatever form you can find it, even if it's just YouTube, and enjoy, because you have no other choice but to enjoy this film.
Because the streets are so savage.
Because the streets are savage, and Linda Blair, most importantly of all, her hair gets bigger and bigger and bigger as the movie continues.
By her time, hair is consumed with vengeance.
By the time she kills the last guys, it's a lot of wiggy hair on top of her head. It's just terrific on every at every turn.
Indeed. All right. Well, as always, we thank you for joining us and want to point you to our friends in the podcast universe, The Comedy Couch with Dennis Hensley and Tony Tripoli, The Popcorn Mafia, Blowhard, Fat Guys at the Movies, The Criterion Cast, Throwing Shade, Team Jack, Schmoes Know, the B-Movies Podcast, of course, Film Spotting SVU, Pod Crash with Chris Gore, and Game Night Guys. You can listen to us on Stitcher Radio at thelounge.com, and of course you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, and while you're there, why not leave us a review if you haven't already? A lot of you guys have left us some very nice reviews, and the more reviews we get, the easier it is for people to find our show. You can like us on Facebook at the Linoleum Knife Podcast page. You can follow us.
You can be our street team and share the links to the podcast on Facebook.
You could be our...
Tell people all about it.
Our savage street team.
Our savage street team.
You can follow us on Twitter at LinoleumCast, and thanks for the compliments we've been getting there,
if
too.
If you take a photograph of yourself wearing awesome 80s gear with a headband, holding a crossbow and or bear trap, we will post your picture on the Linoleum Podcast page on Facebook.
You can check
get
into...
Get to work.
You can check into the show at getglue.com, although we're listed as a TV show. And, of course, you can drop us a line with questions, comments, top 10 lists. We did get some non-top 10 list questions, and I will print those out next week for Dave White to read, and we will talk about them on the show next week. But you can always contact us at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. We thank you for listening, and we will catch you next week. Oh, and before I forget, if you are in the Southern California area, Outfest starts this Thursday, July 12th. Yes, it does. Runs through July 22nd. Tons of great movies.
We will both be there for opening night.
And I will be around.
Alonzo has a new jacket for opening night of Outfest. Yes. He's going to look real handsome.
It's very exciting.
I have a new t-shirt.
Yay. I'm going to be there the whole time.
We like to dress fancy when we go to fancy events.
I'm a senior programmer at Outfest, and there's a lot of great movies this year, so totally go. For a complete schedule and to buy tickets and all that other stuff, go to outfest.org. Hope to see you guys there. Come say hi. And we will catch you next time.
Goodbye.